Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the New Town Theatre. Please welcome a man who has finally achieved his lifetime ambition and is now going to stop. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much.
Hello, everyone. Good to be back.
Had a day off, but now we're back. Welcome to Richard Herring's Latvian Stick Theatre podcast. Which is a great callback to anyone who remembers my 1987 show, The Seven Raymonds. You'll be fucking loving that reference. For everyone else, it was actually the Latvian Stick and Bag Theatre. It was a sketch where we had big sticks with bags on the end and did experimental theatre whilst just saying celebrities' names as the language we did. It was hilarious! Stuart Lee's finest work. But I was talking to the cast of Taskmaster Series 9 the other day. I always just turn up just in case I'm going to be in it this time. I'm not in it. They call it Rehearsal, but I don't know if that's going to catch on. So yeah, my big news is a couple of people have mentioned this and I thought they were messing around, but if you've been following for a long time, I'm a big fan of the Tempting Tatty baked potato shop. There's some fans of the baked potato in. There's a big crossover in the Venn diagram of Richard Herring fans and baked potatoes and IT. I always go in and have a medium-sized jack potato with orange cheddar cheese and mango chutney. Been doing that since 1987. Every time I am asked where I like to eat in Edinburgh, I say the Tempting Tatty in every interview. And I was hoping they would name that particular potato after me, you know, and have a picture of me on the wall saying, have the Richard Herring. And they've finally done it after, it's only taken 32 years. 32 years. But I can give up. That's better than any award I can get from Edinburgh. Liam tweeted me a piece of information about, we've been having a running joke about the Metro mentioned to ladies they weren't meant to put ice lollies in their vaginas. I don't know if you saw that news the other day. And then there was some news about women steaming their vaginas with herbs and hot water, which, again, not meant to do that. It's not good for you, ladies. Don't do that. Liam, you found an article about not putting chocolate up your... Don't put chocolate up your vagina either, ladies. Just leave your vaginas alone, is what I say. Don't put anything up your vagina. I mean, I think the problem with the vagina is the thing you're meant to put up there, or you can put up there, is so disgusting and filthy that you sort of think, well, I might as well have a crack. There's no news on whether you can put chocolate bars up your anus, though, which is all I am interested in, if you've followed the show before. And I didn't have a very good day off, partly because we've got an alarm system in our house, which the landlord was very keen that we always put on and off every time we go in. And there's a setting for, it's quite easy to do, there's a setting for when you're in the house at night time, press a button, and when You go out of the house and press a button. My wife came back from her last performance of Drunk Women Solving Crime, which may involve some alcohol. And they've been out celebrating. And she accidentally pressed the wrong button so that when I went to the toilet, I set all the alarms off. At 1 o'clock in the morning, and it was absolutely fucking terrifying. And the worst thing, she was upstairs going, I pressed the right button. I said, well, you clearly didn't press the right button. She's going, I haven't even drunk that much. Which is, I always know when she's drunk a lot, because that's what she says. She's a wonderful woman. Do listen to her podcast, Drunk Women Solving Crime. It's fun while you listen to the podcast, isn't it, when you have to deal with it when they come home. Setting off alarms. She's a wonderful woman. I'm very lucky to have her. She listens to the podcast. She's amazing. Oh, shit, take that bit out. We're booking the last few guests for this podcast. There's a few. Alice Fraser's just gone into the list for the next week. Richard Osman on tomorrow, so please, that's limited tickets left for that one tomorrow, so please do come along if you can. And I've just booked someone for Brighton on the 15th of September, but only the secret badgers know who it is at the moment. So if you become a badger, you can find out. But I'll announce it, obviously, because, you know. Otherwise, it'd be crazy. No one would know who the guests were. But do check out the richherring.com, and you can see where I'm on tour if you would like to come and see this. I'm talking to people at home, but you're also welcome to come and see another one. If you like. Right, my guest today, my first guest. Oh, God, look at this. I'm tired. Probably. Is no, but I thought I'll have a day off every week in Edinburgh. But I didn't think, did I? I've got kids. That's not a day off. This is my day off. This is my bit. I get 4 hours in the middle of the day when I don't have to look after the fucking kids. Should have done 3 podcasts a day. I'd be the happiest man in the world. My guest today, your first guest, is probably best known as Beth in Climaxed. That is, I just wanted to talk about that as long as I can. Will you please welcome the amazing Lauren Patterson, ladies and gentlemen. Damn, pick up the microphone.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm very good.
Both my guests today, in fact, are very fresh-faced because they've only just come. You've arrived today.
Very smug. There is no better feeling than parachuting in halfway during the festival and like, why are you all so stressed?
And you're here for one performance only
one
today?
One night only. Tomorrow, yeah. It's the way to do Edinburgh. Just come in, laugh at everybody else looking miserable, do your show. Fuck off.
Good, and there's still tickets left for tomorrow, must
there's be. 15 tickets left.
Ooh.
It's because everybody saw me as Beth in Climax and was like, wow.
What was Climax? You were in 2 episodes of Climax.
It was a 5-minute BBC Three online episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
It sounds quite saucy. I think I might have seen
it. They were quite cool. It was like all these different episodes about couples, and the sort of premise of the episode was like those moments after sex. So it might be like couples in a tent after a festival, or couples on a one-night stand, couples who are married and their like relationship's gone to shit. And as always, as a 25-year-old woman with a baby face, I was cast as the 18-year-old virgin. Which is just the story of my life. I see all my friends going up for these really cool adult parts, and I turn up and they're like, nerd, virgin. I'm like, damn it. It's like being at school again.
Well, you do complain about that in your set a little bit, that people have expectations of you from the way you look, which but that's quite good, isn't it? That doesn't marry up with your actual
Definitely.
Material.
I think if I was that sweet and twee, everybody would hate us. Like, I don't think you can get away with being adorable.
No.
Nobody genuinely likes an adorable person. They're always like, if they come on the news and find out they've got dead cats in their house, it'll be her, won't it? Yeah. The kind of adult woman who has Barbie dolls still, and you're like, she's going to kill you one night.
So you're quite rude. You're open, I think,
Yeah, I think if you're a woman and you talk about sex or swear, you get called filthy or rude. Well, actually, it's just being an adult, isn't it? That's all it is. Yeah. Very open, very honest. I don't like to have limits.
No. Yeah. Well, that's what comedy should be
about.
Exactly. And you're very young, which is you are. So you're in early 20s still, more or less.
I think I'm in the mid now, mid 25.
Mid-20s.
Still got a rail card though, so clinging on.
it's quite unusual really to be successful as early as this now, isn't it? It's a long slog for a lot of comedians.
Yeah.
A lot of people who are coming on, I think, oh, you're quite new, and they go, I'm 45 years old. And they've been working for years and years, and you have been working for quite a long time. You started when you were 18.
I started when I was 18. My first gig was the audition for So You Think You're Funny. And I got through to the semi-final because I'm a prick. Everybody was like, oh, that girl's only done one gig. And then I died on my arse in the semi-final, and they were like, she'll learn.
Did you have to change your material in the second gig?
I think you were allowed to do roughly the same stuff, right. But I just... The competition is so you think you're funny, and to be honest, the answer was, not yet. No. You've done one gig, Lauren. You are absolutely not funny yet.
It's that kind of bravado you need. I mean, and you have when you're 18 as well. There's a lot. You know, yeah. I came into Edinburgh when I was 18 or 19 when I did the Stick and Bag Theatre. And, you know, there's that. The confidence is just... I look back and think, how was I that confident that I thought people would pay to see me do
that? I think when you're 18, you've had no knockbacks, really. Nobody's ever told you no, and you've probably never really failed at anything. So I was like, I've got nothing to lose. But if I hadn't started then, no way would I do comedy now. I'd be like, no, I've got a hell of a lot to lose. Like, a house and my mental health. I think I'll just stick working in Boots, if that's all right.
Good point. We were working together on something. We'll talk about stand-up again in a minute, but we were working on a thing for BBC Sounds. Has that gone out yet, the thing we did?
I don't know what happened with that.
Yeah, I had to advise you. It was a show about you learning to be an adult, really.
Yeah. They said they wanted to do a podcast, and they wanted to do it about learning life skills and like a really approachable young adult who's openly clueless but wants to learn. I was like, great. And then they were like, we're going to call it Adulting. And I was like, shoot me in the brain.
So it never came out?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know what happened with it. But we had like a money expert on, didn't we? I learned about ISAs. I learned about mortgages.
Yeah, I learned a lot as well.
I had a great
one. I wish I'd been 25 when I was on it. But, oh, I see.
It was a beautiful moment where I was like, this is all really valuable information. And Rich was like, this would have been.
That's what really helped me out. I don't know, but it is so much harder. All those things. I saw you tweeting about having got an email about affordable flats in London having come through for £450,000.
Yeah. It was last night, and I don't think I'll reach a bigger joke of the festival. Like, an email popped up, and it was like, it must know that I'm looking at houses. It was like, ooh, are you after an affordable first-time home in London? I was like, I am. Here's a two-bed flat. It's £450,000. I was like, that's not affordable. In what way is that affordable? So then I did that classic Northern thing of going on Rightmove and looking what £450,000 would get you in Newcastle. It would get you Newcastle. I'm like, this is amazing.
And I bet it can't. It must have been quite on the outskirts of London for that money as well.
Yeah, I think it wasn't even in a particularly nice bit. I was like, oh, if it was in like bloody, you know, West London, and like, if it was in Harrods, I'd be like, yeah, okay. I can understand the price tag, but I'm like, I know where that is. It's not worth £500,000.
Yeah, a shelf in Harrods you might get. Yeah. You might get like the room that they put a toy on. Yeah. You can just take the toy off at night time and sleep on that shelf.
That's where I live
now. £450,000. There was a garage in Harrods, near Harrods, wasn't it, that sold for some ridiculous, like £1 million for just the garage just up the road. Oh, God. It's very, my first flat was in Balham, and I paid £95,000 for it.
God, that's insane.
Sure enough, it was...
I'm not feeling smug anymore, if anyone wanted to check in.
That's old money as well. That's £95,000 in old money, in 20th century money. But yeah, I don't know. I can't believe that young people haven't risen up and sort of rebelled against the system. And I'm on your side, even though I should really be fighting.
I think a lot of young people want to rebel, and they're like, "What do we want? Cheaper rent? What are we going to do about it? Live at home." That's actually what we'll do for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of easier in some ways, but yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't. No. I think I would do. I'd be chucked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you moved from... How long ago did you move to London?
I moved to London 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was quite difficult for you. You'd just broken up in a relationship.
So hard. So we said we would do long distance, and I was like, because that works, doesn't it? Yeah. Like, we barely see each other when we're in the same city, but when we've got a whole motorway between us, and it was just impossible because I was working all day as a waitress to be able to afford to live in London, and then gigging in the evening. He was a bartender, so he was always working in the evening. I got to January, I'd been there like 6 months, and I was like, we've never seen each other. And it was that horrible moment where I was like, right, it's my career or the boy I love with all my heart. And I was like, see ya! I'm gonna go for the career, thank you. And I felt like the most selfish person in the world because I was like, I'm giving up someone who I love for something I love, but the career pays me more than he did, to be quite... He never got us a throne to sit in Edinburgh,
exactly.
No.
Well, but it is, again, when you're young, those things seem so important and You know, but it is. I mean, it's ultimately that you have to make those kind of life decisions. And you can't. And I think when you're young as well, like 6 months is a long time to not have sex. When you're 52 and married, that's just your normality. I don't really see my
that's
wife.
It's just winter.
My wife lives in the same house, and I haven't seen her for 6 months. But it's. Yeah, but you know, when you're young, that feels like such a long time.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And especially, I feel like young, he's probably like the boyfriend who was my first proper boyfriend who I'd really loved. And I was like, but I love him. And then I was like, I also love comedy.
Yeah.
And maybe it was a selfish decision, but I hope he meets a girl who can give him a lot more time than I could.
Has he not met anyone yet? That's 3 years. That's a long time.
I don't know. I try not to look.
Yeah.
I try not to look. Never look back. No. Because what if he's gotten really fit? I mean, he already was quite fit, but if he's gotten really fit, I'd be like, damn it. Comedy's good, but it ain't got a six-pack, has it? No.
So was your show the sort of breakthrough show that you... I got nominated for the Newcomer.
And it was an accident of a show. I wanted to write a show about not being ladylike and not feeling like a modern woman, and that's why I called it Lady Muck when I had to submit the brochure in February, and then I broke up with him maybe like 2 weeks later, and I was like, I want to write about a breakup. But quite frankly, I was too sad to write about it, so I was turning up with what I thought was hilarious breakup anecdotes, and everyone was like, are you okay? Like, I was like, yeah, like loads of comedians make jokes about their breakups, and they were like, but that's not funny what you're saying, like it's just very, very sad. So then I was like, right, I'll write a show about why my relationships fail, because I feel like all of my relationships had obviously failed. And I was like, is it because of comedy or is it because it's me? So I'll track them all down. I had three, and I was like, that'll be fun. There's the nice one, there's the like a different one who I didn't work with for very long, and then there's this one who ghosted us and disappeared from my life and just literally dropped us. And as I started to write the show, everybody was like, that's the one. Nobody wants to hear you cry about the boy who you broke up with to move to London. We want to hear about you getting ghosted. That's sad, but it's fucking funny. That's trauma and comedy. Yeah. And I was like, no. So I would do all these previews being like, so I love this boy, and then I broke up with this boy, but let me tell you about a boy who I got ghosted by. And everybody was like, that's too confusing. Just write this show about that boy.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. I felt so sneaky on stage. I was like, this is two boys. I feel like Adele. Oh.
And so did you ever catch up with the guy who ghosted you?
Well, I did. I tracked him down. Yeah. So we met up a couple of times, and the whole idea was that he would tell me what he didn't like about me and what I'd done wrong in the relationship so that I wouldn't make those mistakes again. We kept missing each other. Like, he wouldn't turn up, or he would turn up and I'd be like, I need to leave. And I was like, he's ruined me show. And then I eventually sat down with him, I think maybe a month before I came to Edinburgh, and I was like, I'm really pleased he came to meet us. And he went, I've not got a bad word to say about you. And I thought, you arsehole. I have spent months trying to try. I want you to say bad things about me. I'm a comedian. That's what we do. I need you to rip me apart so I could validate myself on stage. He had nothing bad to say about us, and I was furious. And everybody was like, he's given you the best ending of your show you could possibly imagine. So I stood on stage at the end and I read every nice thing that he'd said about us. Right. And I was like, isn't it weird how I wanted to write a show about what I'd done wrong, and I didn't consider that I was actually pretty fucking fine the way I was. Like, oh, what a surprise. I'm a goddess. Yeah.
I mean, if he's ghosting you, then, I mean, he's the dick, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a trip to Australia out the back of it, so I'd happily be ghosted again in the future if I got 6 months in Sydney. It was one good. I wasn't crying then.
And did you find it quite hard? But you'd done stuff, I think, about being the loneliness of, like, moving... home, and, you know, because I think when you're in your 20s, when you're young, the idea of admitting that you're lonely or that you're not surrounded by friends going out is the most difficult thing, right?
So that's got to be very empowering. So many of my like actor friends would be like, yeah, I've moved to London and it's the best, like something to do every night, I've made so many friends. And I was like, am I a freak? Why does no one want to be my friend? And I felt like I was failing, but it's because I was working in a restaurant every day and doing comedy every night. I had no time to make friends. And I know people like people, I think the only thing that is more common than an Edinburgh show with a sad bit is a comedian on Facebook whinging about Edinburgh shows with sad bits. And my show did have a sad bit, but also I was so sad. I was so lonely and so heartbroken, and I just accidentally wrote this really personal but very funny thing, and I was like, I didn't mean to cry in my show. I promise, I didn't. I'm just quite fragile at the minute. It's a surprise I'm even up here, to be honest. But I'm really pleased I did. Like, I think there's nothing wrong with sharing it, and I think so many young people came to see that show and were like, God, I've been dumped in a shit, and I've done a long-term relationship, a long-distance relationship, and it didn't work, or I've just moved away to chase my dreams, and I feel like it's not working. I was like, cry and write a show about it.
You can't all do it, though, Lauren, although you mean if everyone does a show,
that would be problematic.
There's enough comedians already.
It would shorten the waiting list for therapy, though, wouldn't it? That's my only game plan. I'm like, make them all write shows, and then I can get up that NHS waiting list quicker. That's what I want.
All right, I'll ask you some emergency questions. Obviously, you must never put chocolate in your vagina, Lauren. You know that.
Never,
but if you had to put a chocolate bar in your vagina, which chocolate bar would you put in your vagina?
Oh, not a flake, because that would just crumble, wouldn't it? That would cause more of a clean-up. Maybe, like, what are they called? Like a toffee crisp?
Okay.
Because I feel like it's quite sturdy, so it wouldn't melt.
Yeah. I think it would melt.
I'm quite a cold human in every you heard how I booted a boy for a career. Yeah. I am ice on the inside.
Good. I've got that one out of the way. Would it be the same one up your bum as well? Because that's the real question.
Oh, that would have to be, no, it would be a Milky Way crispy roll, because that's quite a little one.
Okay, that's
isn't
good.
It? Yeah. Little. I had answers far too quickly for those, didn't I? That is
that was good. That's worrying. Well, let's see how we go. I've been asking everyone this question nearly on the and trying to work out if I know the answer ahead of time. I'm not sure this time. Have you ever seen a ghost?
I think I have.
Okay.
I think I have. No.
Yeah, I would have swayed towards that.
I do. I remember, like, no, I see things quite a bit, but just, like, because I'm really short-sighted. So, but I remember being little and looking, like, really young and looking out my bedroom door and seeing someone coming up the stairs in, like, a cape and a witch's mask. And I remember for years being convinced it was a ghost, but now I'm an adult, I'm like, it was probably my sister for Halloween or something. But I remember for years being like, no, I saw a ghost.
I don't think ghosts wear masks, though, do they?
Depends how they died.
I suppose.
Yeah. They died when they were trick-or-treating. They are committed to that mask.
In Scooby-Doo, the ghosts always have muscles, but because they're not ghosts.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So maybe there's someone trying to scare you away from the landing for some reason.
That's true.
Because there was plutonium mine there. Yeah. And luckily, you didn't fall for it. It could be the case.
I'm very easily spooked, though. You could easily convince it. Like, someone, you could tell a story now that this place is haunted, and I'd be like, see ya, bye.
This place is definitely haunted. If anyways, well, I've seen people backstage.
Uh-huh.
And I asked one of them if they were ghosts, and they said they were. They were dressed in medieval clothes, and there was another old man in my dressing room. He sat there, didn't say anything for ages, and then when I went to the loo, he'd gone when I came back. I think
that
he might have been one of the Masons.
I've
been saying quite rude things about the Masons. This is a Masonic hall.
Yeah.
I've been implying they're murderers and sex criminals. And when I say implying, saying that. And then there was a little old man sitting up there in a tartan suit. Looking at me weirdly, so maybe that was my warning to stop doing
stay
that.
Stay away.
Yeah, I'm still alive though. I was snagging off Prince Andrew the other day and went out uncensored. And still here, but they bide their time. No, they're clever. He's got to wait. Can't do another one straight away, can he? Just to wait a little. Oh, that was another question. If you, this is my favourite question, the Edinburgh Fringe Emergency question. If you could take any one item from any art gallery or museum in the world and have it for yourself and take it home and keep it, which painting or item from a museum would you like to have?
I would want to take just the whole gift shop.
Right.
How good would that be?
Well, so you could run it from your home?
Run it from my house. That's how I'm going to get a mortgage. Because then every time someone comes to visit, I'd be like, do you want a pencil?
Do you want and then a very overpriced pencil as well.
Yeah.
I think, but there's a lot of these sort of scams in the world. I mean, we're in one of the scams, which is being a comedian and make people pay to come and see us. That's quite a good scam. But there's lots of places that have that markup. Then if you're on holiday, you're allowed to mark up the price of everything. If you run a gift shop in a museum, you're allowed to sort of mark up the price.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of you feel, the customer feels they should buy something, I suppose.
Yeah, because they're like, well, I've not appreciated any of the art. But if I buy a postcard of the most visually appealing piece of art I didn't understand, then I'm still smart.
Yeah. I suppose if you've got the gift shop, you've got all the posters as well, so if you fancy any of the posts, the pictures, you can put them up. Because you don't really need the original one.
No.
But it'd be nice to have the original one, though, wouldn't it? Just a bit of security, Van Gogh up there.
So bad with art. I remember going to the, is it the Picasso Museum?
It could be. That is one of them.
Where's he? Which bit of the world? Barcelona?
Yeah, that would be. That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, and I walked in and I was like, I'm going to have a day in an art gallery. I'm so cultured. I did the whole thing in about 3 minutes. Yeah. And then I felt really bad. I was like, I don't think I've looked at the art enough. So then I did another lap, but then people were just looking at us like, she's already done a lap. And I was like, now do I look like I like the art too much? And I think I did just go to the gift shop. I was like, no, art isn't for me.
Yeah. It's good. I agree with you, really. I think it's you do feel like you're beholden to go in and get some, but occasionally you'll find one and go, I kind of like something about that.
Yeah, I like ones of the sea, ones of like the beach. I'm like, that's nice, that's pretty. Anyone of the Tyne Bridge, because I'm from the northeast, so it's like that classic thing where as soon as I see anything with the Tyne Bridge on, I just like rip off my shirt and stop bleeding black and white, even if I haven't been home in like 5 years. I'm like, I'm so northern.
And so one of your earliest gigs was supporting Catherine Ryan, who no one has a bad word to say about.
She is an angel. She is glorious.
Yeah.
I did a... No, one day you'll catch her.
One day I'll find someone who doesn't like
it. Really nice. I was still at uni, and I'd done the Funny Women competition. I'd got the finals, and she hosted it. And then, like, sort of 8 months later, I was coming to the end of university, and I'm sat in a lecture one day, and I got a tweet off her, and she was like, how much material have you got? And I was like... questionable. Depends what day he catches on. So I just was like, why? And she said, oh, and Ben and I had not spoke to her in this like interim period. She was like, I need someone to come do tour support for me. It's 25 minutes. Do you want to do it? I'd never done more than 15 minutes. And I was like, I've got 25 minutes. I have got all of the minutes. What I did was I just did my 15-minute set, but slower. Because I was like, I don't have 25 minutes. Shit. And I think I wrote a couple of new jokes, and I was like, that's about 70. Where am I going to get 8 more minutes from? Turns out I speak fast. So I was like, 15 minutes of mine is 25 minutes for everyone else. And I just totally winged it, and it worked amazingly because I got more tour support off the back of it. I got an agent off the back of it. I got like that kind of was what started my career for us. And I'm like, God, I wish. Well, a lot of comedians do take chances on people, but it just proves if you're in that position where you've got a platform, you can make a massive difference to somebody's. I was a 21-year-old student, and then suddenly I had like a London agent, and I was like, this is fancy. This is nice. I remember going to the office, and it was all like, obviously, like the glass table and like art on the walls, and I was like, I do not belong here, but I'm just going to go in with confidence and see what happens. And I didn't know how to conduct myself in a professional meeting, and they were chatting about like wanting to help me and if I wanted to be helped. And I was like, what do they mean by help? Like, do they just mean they're going to give us some tips? So I played it very cool, because my dad was like, play it cool. So I did. And then on the train back, I was like, oh yeah, really nice to meet you. I'd love for you to give me any more help. And they were like, cool, we'll get a contract in the post here. And I was like, have I got an agent? What the hell just happened? It was the weirdest afternoon of my life. I thought they were like, oh, we'll sort of give you a bit mentorship, and if you need any advice or any gigs in London, got a bloody agent.
Yeah.
Thought I was Billy Big Bollocks coming back to uni. I was like, all right, dickheads, which you have got an agent? Me, yeah.
But it's great. Well, you know, Catherine is, I think, she's a big supporter of... I mean, especially female comedians, but I think of everyone, she's always sort of got a lot of time
for
people.
Definitely. She really wants to help you. When I first moved to London, I'd gone on a night out, and then coming back, I'd come out a different tube exit of where I'd just moved, and it threw us completely. I was like, tipsy, I'm in a new city. So instantly I was like, I'm lost. Oh my God, this is where I die. I asked 3 people, because I'm from the north and that's what we do. You ask for help, but no one wanted to help. No. People just ignored us. People were walking past, and it was quite late and quite dark. And I thought, I don't know where I am, and I don't know how to get home. Couldn't remember my address to put into Google Maps, and I was like, what the hell do I do? So I think I tweeted about it, and she told me to screenshot my Google Maps so she knew where I was on a pin, and she sent me an Uber to come and get us. And I was approximately 3 minutes from my house. I literally got in the car, and obviously I'm a bit tipsy. Catherine had told the driver that I was her little sister, because he was like, I can't find her, I'm going to leave. And she was like, no, it's my little sister, you have to make sure she gets home. And he was like, why have you let your sister drink so much? And why is she crying and talking funny? And I remember getting in this Uber, and I'm obviously so upset. Like, I'd never been somewhere so big and overwhelming as London. I'd been really thrown by the fact nobody would help us, because I'd never experienced that before. So I'm in the taxi all upset, and he went, I know you don't know your address, but can you point which direction to go? I was like, it's definitely up. Oh, there's my house. See ya, thank you. I was so close, ridiculously close.
Oh, well, that's very... it's a good story, so she's a good person.
Yeah.
It's unusual for comedians, that's why I'd like to get it out there. There must be some ulterior motive. I think she's going to come out and there'll be some really evil thing in her.
There's definitely a lot of comedians who would have just let me die in the street. They would have been like, oh, I've seen she's got the comedy store booked in, I'll have that.
One step
let her die.
So your show, are you doing, is it the last year's show you're doing?
Last year's show, yes. It's the final hurrah of it. I am flogging a dead peach. Yeah, it's called Peachy, and it's about being happy. Because I did a sad show the first year, and I got annoyed that people were only implying that I'd done well because I cried in it. And I was like, well, I'm going to write a happy show and spite you all. And that did bloody well as well. So,
next year, just, I'm all right.
Yeah, next year I'll be like, I'm indifferent.
Nothing good happening, nothing bad happening, it's all right.
I'm running out of emotions. I've only got two emotions, happy, sad and hungry. And I've done, maybe next year's just an hour of me being like, listing the best restaurants in Edinburgh.
Yeah. Tempting tatty. Where's it on? What time?
It's on at the Monkey Barrel. Monkey Barrel 1. And there's 15 pre-sale tickets available, but they do keep tickets on the door for you to walk in and pay what you want. So if it does sell out, there will still be, if you queue, you'll still be able to get in.
Okay.
And get away with saying it for free, because you can just be like, yeah, I paid, as you sneak out and steal money from my pocket.
Well, you're doing so well, I don't think anyone should pay, right? Oh no, she hasn't got a house. I've got a house. Well, thanks so much for coming down.
Thank you for having us.
It's lovely to see you again, ladies and gentlemen. The amazing Laura Basson. Lovely. Before we crack on, just a reminder that you all got a free programme at the beginning. That's a gift from me to you. I hope you enjoy it. At the end of each show, we're making a collection for Scope, which is a fantastic charity that I'm patron of, which helps people with cerebral palsy and trying to get equal rights and access for disabled people. So if you'd like to give some money for that programme, there will be buckets at the end of the show. I hope someone holding one here, but if not, I will be sitting at a little desk on the way out. I should have a bucket there. And I'm also selling copies of Emergency Questions, 1001 Conversation Savers for Every Occasion. That's the new one. I've got the old, a few copies of the old one, Emergency Questions. There's only 500 questions in that one. Cost the same as the one with 1001 in it. They're different questions, mainly. And that one can fit in your handbag, though. So that's the. And then if you buy both, you get some stickers, or you can buy the stickers. It's nice. Very happy to sign your programme, say hello, whatever. Not to you, mate, you look weird. Okay. No photos with you. I don't want people thinking that my fans are nerds, right? So I don't want people thinking all my fans are bearded guys with glasses. They're not, are they, Liam? You haven't even got a beard? No. So there we go. There's the two very different types of fans I have. And do come along and see any of the Rehellastopers if you are around. Thank you. And you can become a badger at gofasterstrike.com/badges if you're interested. Right.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Let's crack on. My guest, the second guest today, is probably best known as one of the writers on All Star Driving School. That is the that's the level we've got to. As we get further into the fringe, it'll just be harder to get people who've really done anything. He's done other stuff as well. Will you please welcome the amazing Jeff Norcott, ladies and gentlemen? Thank you. Sit down. Can we have a microphone?
Right.
Yeah.
No.
No.
This could be a tricky one. You missed one there, mate. I mean, if we're at the Liberal Arts Festival here, you could have gone for that I was on the ill-fated TV channel Nuts TV.
Well, yes.
Yes.
Well, we could talk about that. That's actually
it was the sports show, but...
That's too good for the opening credit. That's my main
conversation.
It's going to be about Nuts TV. How was Nuts TV?
Yeah, it was me and Comedy Dave.
Yeah.
It was. He just had a kid and he was doing the morning show, so it's supposed to be like heavily based on the banter, but after about 3 weeks... we realised we needed to script all that banter.
Yeah.
So we were essentially doing banter off an auto cue. That works fucking well. fucking nervous about this one, mate.
You should be nervous.
Yeah. I'm subconsciously gone, Remainerville. I'm just waiting for the first pelter.
We're going to be, it's lovely, it's a very friendly podcast.
You're a nice guy.
I'm very friendly with you.
I'm not.
No, you are. I think you are a nice guy. I mean, it's... You've got this reputation as being, well, and a self-proclaimed only conservative voter standard.
Not these days.
Or
mate.
Only out. Yeah, not these days.
One of few. I've had to change it on Wikipedia. One of 14. incredibly unique now.
So is this stand-up comedians who admit they vote Tory?
Or why do you say admit?
Because I think a lot of stand-up... There's a lot of
right-wing
stand-up comedians who aren't out being right, you know.
So you said out as well.
Who would, if you asked them, would say they didn't vote Tory?
Yeah. But no, I know what you mean. And also, certainly the way that their lives are organised economically,
you say
you're fairly economically right wing. And the circuit itself is sort of like Thatcher's sort of ideal thing, isn't it? You have this notional, abstract thing, and then you just try and charge exponentially more for it without really any good reason. So it's this weird sort of stock market that just goes up and then can crash for no fucking reason. So. Yeah. I think we're all kind of more economically right. You know, people that sell merch and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of left-wing comics sell merch.
Yeah. I sell merch and I don't employ anyone else to do it because I don't want to give anyone any money apart from myself. And also, if I employed someone to do it, I'd have to be paying out. I sell about three books at the end of each gig. And I'd just have to give that money to the person selling the books. And
you,
I have to
the
buy
way the
books.
That you do things, I absolutely love. I know a lot of comics say this to you, but I like the independence of it and stuff like that.
It's really
something to aim for.
But that's what stand-up is, though, isn't it? There's the autonomy of stand-up that you can do what you want. And, you know, and regardless, I think it's, you know, it is great that there are other voices in stand-up. When I started doing stand-up, there were at least people from a lot of more different backgrounds than there are now. I'm sort of with you on quite a lot of your...
Brexit views.
Because
are you still hard Brexit?
I fucking loved hard Brexit, Richard.
That was my favourite.
But I agree with. I mean, I agree. You're on Brexit, you say you kind of want No Deal Brexit to go through just to see what happens.
I want to know how that story ends. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not saying it's coming from a great place morally or politically, but we've had a big group of people saying it's definitely going to be an absolute clusterfuck, and other people saying it'll be fine. I would like to know.
But
how
I
that
agree
ends.
With you to the extent that I think the only way for us to progress is to say this is what this thing that you say you want is.
We have to test an idea, don't we, at some point.
I mean, I think it's unfortunate that it probably will impact badly on the people who want it to be to go well. But
it might, I suppose it might. But I guess the swathe of working class support, and I know it wasn't working class people didn't exclusively support Brexit, but there is. You look at the way that Tory party policies are tending now. Whoever's in government will have to satisfy that demographic, regardless. Yeah. You know, so I think that they've made themselves known, and they will get service regardless of what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think if it happened the other way around, if it had been 52-48 the other way around, if you'd ignored the 48, in that case, I think you'd have got into a lot of trouble.
But
and what I think about is nobody actually voted for no deal Brexit. No one voted
some
to become...
Some people did, I think.
But nobody, it wasn't...
I didn't, I'll be honest, I didn't. I thought that there would be a
deal. It wasn't on the agenda. The only people saying there'd be a disaster from Brexit were the Remain side. So if you, I'd say we voted for Brexit, we have to have Brexit. But if you're going to have no deal Brexit, I think that's the same as remaining. I think it's so far away from what people vote for that you'd have to have another referendum.
But then, if you have another referendum, what if it's 52-48 the other way? It's like, does Remain go through on away goals? What's the... I understand the logic. This is the point I'm at now, is I think we spent a lot of time being incredibly tribal about it. And we've all become weirdly politically ideological. Like, we've got this kind of straight line through our politics and everyone else is talking shit. But we've got this sentient synthesis of the world around us. But I can understand all the arguments now, but I just think when there's a democratic mandate, some kind of meaningful Brexit has to happen. And I get that people don't understand that. I mean, sovereignty, it sounds quite antiquated, doesn't it? It sounds like some geezer standing by a river with a piece of... That's the Magna Carta, isn't it? This is... Now they'll look at me going, yeah, typical Leave voter. He knows fuck all about anything. Fuck you.
But if we end up just being, a vassal to America rather than a part of Europe, we're not going to vote on that. No one's going to vote, do you want to join America? We should have a vote on it, but also we're joining an America that has admitted they're going to put America first and leaving a Europe that is trying to...
I do think the chlorinated chicken thing has become the Remain version of bendy bananas. I don't think it's quite as much of an issue as people are making out. And I mean, you talk about disaster. I think one of the problems for sort of a liberal Remainers as such is this constant dystopian prophesizing. It's almost like they've made it. It's impossible. It can't be as bad as that. You know what I mean? They're all going to be like milking our cat for nutrition. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm going to throw it out there. And then when that doesn't happen, the hardline Brexiteers will be able to go, see? Nobody milked their cat. Brexit worked. You said we'd be fighting over the last paracetamol. Everyone's got paracetamol.
Yeah. I mean, I just think we shouldn't... It shouldn't have been put to us in the first place. I don't think any of us were qualified. The people who are in making the decisions don't understand what any of the issues
That's
are.
True.
Right, so I think... I agree. I don't think another referendum is the answer, because I think what's the point in asking...
But I think we're flawed at every single election. I mean, if anything, a general election involves a lot more issues that we know fuck all about. So the idea that we couldn't just do a bit of homework for a single issue...
But you vote... At least you're then voting for someone who you think you go... You know, that's what I think. We vote to general election. We go, you go and sort it out. You go and sort it out amongst yourselves, Parliament, what should we do, and work it out, and that's your job. It's not my job to know... You know, I think 5-6 years ago... No one would have given a fuck either way about this subject, really.
It's true, on both sides.
It's been made into a thing.
It's weird as well, don't you get the Remainers? It's become like a real lifestyle choice for them as well. You know, the ones that go on the people's vote marches and stuff and like paint their faces. And think it's just weird. It's like somebody hitting middle age and then going, I've been Tottenham all my life, mate. You go, but you didn't give a shit about football 3 years ago. Where's this tattoo come from? You know?
Yeah, well, you know, it would just be interesting to see what happens, if it ever happens. I mean, if anything ever happens, or we could just be in this stasis. If we no deal, then we still have to do the deal. So it's still carrying on afterwards.
Or we could just thrive so much, you know, we just, you know what, EU, have some of that, look at us. Sorry, this is what I do, I wind up people sometimes, I can't help it. There is something fun about being in this.
But it's sort of important because comedy is boring if everyone agrees with each other.
Well, yeah.
And B, you should be expressing a viewpoint. You know, I don't really like any. And you know, I do it a little bit myself, but you've got to do comedy that's taking the piss out of everything. You really take a stand as a comedian about anything, I think. then you're sort of saying, but I'm not able to take the piss out of this. So I think a comedian's job is to be able to stand back and go, well, look, this is why Corbyn's ridiculous, this is why
Boris Johnson's just ridiculous. Calling bullshit on things. I think that's one of the odd things I find in the debate about what's called right-wing comedy, is that I think, you know, Stuart Lee said it's about you're on the side of the bankers, and I thought it's a bit simpler than that. All it is that is a Did you just get me on the show to piss off Stuart Lee, by the way?
I didn't know. You know, to be honest, every guest would piss off Stuart Lee.
That's true.
most of it himself. So.
But I just think it's like, you know, it's just critique. It's like left-wing comedy critiques the ideas and the personalities and the ideology of the right. And that's all right-wing comedy does. And I think that, you know, when I started doing it, I started talking about it in 2013. But the thing was, no one really gave that much of a shit then. We weren't as political as we are now, but I certainly notice, I think the referendum is often held up as like a watershed, but I actually think the 2015 general election was such a shock to people, wasn't it? Because people are kind of, it was the first time that we became aware of echo chambers, and people were, you know, just waking up to the shocking news that Ed Miliband wasn't going to lead the world's sixth biggest economy, and they didn't see that coming. And I think that really pricked people into something, and it's been a different proposition since then, I would say.
Yeah, but if you think, if everything has been sort of orchestrated from Russia, and what I find is both in America and here is people who claim to be the most patriotic are the first to kind of just let all of that go. In America, the people who are the most Christian are the first able to go, oh no, it's fine, we're not having any immigrants in because, you know, Jesus wasn't any kind of immigrant or anything, was he? And we're gonna have guns because I think Jesus said you were allowed to shoot people if you wanted. You know, it's clearly nothing to do with those symbols, you know, they're just people who want
I want to win the argument. I agree, and it's sort of exposed a lot of hypocrisies. I mean, you've got Tories having, you know, said fuck business, right? Labour out of touch with the working classes, Lib Dems saying bollocks to a democratic vote, and the Greens, you know, reaching out finally to people that don't live in caravans and drink their own piss. I think these are unprecedented times, but I think if anyone in the audience or anyone listening thinks that you've got to this point in the Brexit process without being deeply hypocritical, I think that period is over. We've all done it on some level by now, including me. And that's one of the things I think of my comedy is always some of it comes from knowledge of my own hypocrisy. Do you know what I mean? Like I'd never say something that I didn't think. But sometimes I think something and think, that's fucking funny that I think that. You know, I'm surprised that I think that. So I did a bit on Mash Report about why I thought that, you know, everybody over the age of 80 should be denied NHS treatment. And well, like, you've never thought it. I just, you know, but like, I'm not saying I definitely think that should happen, but I remember being angry about the demands on the NHS, thinking about, you know, it's already something that swallows up a lot of money. What could we do? And then I thought, yeah, they've had a good knock when they're 80, you know, maybe it's time.
Logan's Run into it. We make it 30.
Yeah.
I know, it's got to be older than you, Jeff. It's got to be older than you.
But I thought that, and I said, a couple of people said to me, like, oh, you're just playing the part of the evil Tory. I was like, no, I am an evil Tory. That's more offended by the fact they thought I was...
On the MASH report, you definitely, there's an element where you are, you know, you are laughing at yourself as well. I think, but we all need to be able to step back from ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I think comedy's about testing what you think. So when I've done stuff, you know, from a... I mean, I don't think I'm as liberal as people, like, certainly people on Twitter. Everyone's got this idea. They go, oh, you think this, and therefore you think this about everything, right? Which I'm sure you get a lot as well. So there's no nuance. It's like people decide you're on a side, and therefore you think everything.
They extrapolate a lot from that.
They extrapolate to what they imagine everyone on that side thinks as well, which isn't even the case in any case. But, yeah, so it's important to be able to step back and even say something you don't believe, being able to test whether...
Well, that is satire as well, isn't it? You know, in its purest form is to test an idea. But I think that, I suppose that if you don't like the idea of comedy that's right or centre, you'll try and use anything to shoot it down. So the first charge is that you're disingenuous, you know, and stuff like that. I've never heard people say to a left-wing comic, like, oh, you're not really left-wing, you know, but that does seem to be... With a few of the guys coming through now, it's people say, oh, you're just adopting a stance to get coverage. It's not that I'm adopting it. I mean, I'm milking the shit out of it. That's not, there's no two ways about that, but it does cover. You know, I did wonder, actually, because this will probably make people a bit sick in their mouths, but I am a Conservative Party member, and I... Yeah, exactly. You can get away with a lot of stuff. I think even some of the people that vote Conservative at that point would go, right, I'm out, Jeff. That is, you're not right. But I did get to vote on the next Prime Minister for £25, so... What'd you get, you know, for £3 with Jeremy?
Did you vote for...
Do you know what? Truth of the matter is, I didn't vote for either of them because my guys didn't really make the cut sort of thing. I didn't feel that either Boris or Jeremy Hunt... I mean, like, He just looks like an alien that's just arrived in his own body, doesn't he? He looks, every time he speaks, he looks shocked to have been activated. So he wasn't my guy. I do think there is a potential problem with Boris, is that, you know, like, if you say that he's going to roll back rights for gay people and people of colour, again, it's this thing of dystopian prophesying, is that I don't think that he's going to do that. So you're almost setting the bar too low for him to be able to be a relative success, if you know what I mean. At the end of the day, and this is possibly one of the things about Boris that's most disingenuous, is he's ultimately a metropolitan liberal. You know, some of the populist posturing is a mechanism to get into power. But you look at the circles that he moves in, you know, you look at his partner, he's not going to go that way. But I guess we'll see.
But that's what
that was a shit idea.
All politicians are now just interested in getting voted in. And yeah. Of course, that's always been the case to an extent.
Yeah.
But it used to be you said what you thought, and people decide whether they could agree with enough of it. And now it's politicians who are trying to test the water all the time. Exactly what you're saying. Trying, I'll say this about, you know, Trump is an example of that, of basically winking at right wing, you know, white supremacists, whilst also occasionally, you know, defending some black guys.
Having lunch with Kanye.
Yeah.
It's a strange deal, isn't it? Yeah. I think that, I suppose what's happened in the last few years is that, you know, you can get locked down in sort of metropolitan circles in a certain way of thinking and way of seeing the world. And it's not just about the liberal bubble. It's just, I'll give you an example. Like the recent announcements from Boris on Law and Order have played out really well. Surprise, surprise. A lot of the country, even if you look at Labour left-wing heartlands, are pretty strict on law and order. This isn't rocket science, you know, but I guess it's a brand of politics that's being revisited rather than a new thing.
But do you think, why are working class people hoodwinked into following like someone from Eton? Why, like, you've done a show criticising the middle classes.
Yeah, sorry.
Why are you criticising the middle classes? And, you know, don't you think the upper classes want the middle classes and the working classes to be fighting out with each other? Middle classes are just, you know, my family are middle class.
Yeah.
Two generations ago are working class. Middle class, most middle class people are, you know, are so close to their working class roots on the whole. Whereas people like Boris Johnson have a pedigree going back centuries of all posh people
I know what you're saying.
We're fighting against each other.
I know what you're saying, but I quite like toffs. It's a, it's a dark admission. They make me laugh. I'm fond of them. I also think, like, I don't necessarily agree with Jacob Rees-Mogg's worldview, but I sort of think if I was rich, I'd be a bit like him. Do you know what I mean? Just have a shitload of kids, give them weird fucking names. You know what I mean? Make them wear a monocle at the breakfast table. You know, I'd be like crass. You know, so I sort of find entertainment, and I suppose particularly with the liberal middle class, it amuses me to wind them up for one, because they're so like, I'm nice. I quit things. I've quit caffeine. You know, they're always quitting things, right? I think the liberal middle class need to just fucking chill out and enjoy life. And the other thing, I suppose, is it comes from a sense of, you know, particularly with the documentary, is like a sense of self-loathing that obviously, that's more the way my life has gone of late. You know, I grew up on a council estate, but I've known the taste of brioche, you know. And it's all right. And you've got to give that to the middle class. They know the food. If there's one thing I would say, that they know, I mean, their weddings are shit, but they know what to put on a salad. And I do, you know, on a more serious note, I suppose what happened where you know, in the absolute upper classes in terms of voting for Brexit and the working classes, it created this weird temporary alliance, I guess. So whereas, as you rightly say, normally there would be more of a kinship between the middle and the working classes, there's this other thing which is value system, you know, your relationship with faith, flag and family. And maybe in this period of time, temporarily, those things are perhaps more closely aligned.
But do you not think do you not think Boris Johnson is more likely to be just taking the piss than and just using that and Trump? So he doesn't give a fuck about any working class person, does he?
No, but
Trump doesn't give a fuck about any of those people in the Midwest, does he?
I think you've probably got some people that do buy into it, but most people, it's kind of a means to an end. Like I say, it's a temporary sort of alliance of viewpoints. I don't think like Boris Johnson would want to hang out with someone like me.
But he'd like just fuck you over as well. That's what I think. I think he's saying all this stuff, you know, pre the election that's about to happen after we've Brexited. And I'm absolutely confident the Tories will romp home in the next election.
They might. I think the Brexit Party are a bigger problem for them than they realised. I think a lot of people are more strongly aligned to that. Just the branding of it was just It was kind of weird, wasn't it? Because you had like the Remain parties that are supposed to be the whizzy kind of like up to date. You know, you'd have thought that they would be shit hot on the social media, but it was awful, wasn't it, their campaign? Whereas the Brexit party really, really did a great campaign. And I think the Tories have got more of a battle on their hands winning back voters from the Brexit party than they thought. And the other thing is that Labour voters who maybe were considering holding their nose and voting Tory, particularly in old mining towns, you give them another option, they might prefer that than the people that shut down their minds.
I think they'll shut down Brexit. I mean, if they Brexit, then the Brexit party's, you know, in trouble, isn't it? Because that's all.
There'll have to be something else, won't they, that lots of British people give a shit about.
Yeah, they just have to say, you know, we'll send all the immigrants home party.
I think UKIP went that way and they lost support. So I'm optimistic about this country, and I think the reason that UKIP are starting to fold is because most people don't feel like that. And if you look at recent surveys, you know, the attitude towards immigration is not so much of a priority now. You know, a lot of people are more positive about it now than they were in 2016.
That's my first askance little.
No,
that was the first one. I think the fact that people are willing to go, you know, to jump into bed with America and not with Europe just sort of suggests that it's about, that it's, you know, when it makes financial sense to be with Europe and it makes no economic sense to be with a country that is saying we're going to put our country
first,
and yeah, we'll take advantage of the fact that you're desperate for any kind of trade. I mean, that's a terrible thing.
No, you're right.
We should
hook up with Japan or something. Yeah, you know what I mean? Just trying to fucking
China. I mean, China's the way forward, isn't it? Let's just become Chinese. Just join Hong Kong.
That's a really good time to mention that. I think let's take it back. Let's take Hong Kong back. It's what we need. Was it Rod Liddell said we needed a war? Fucking right, Hong Kong, mate. Let's go.
So what's your show this year? You're doing a work in progress.
Well, I'm doing a work in progress, mainly because I've sort of started to realise that the kind of people that review shows at Edinburgh aren't ever really going to like me that much. You know, this bloke that sort of looks like he shouts things out of a van. I'm not really a cup of tea. And it's not like I'm angry about that. I've just kind of had a moment going, yeah, what's the point? Why they should go and review the kind of people that they like and build their career. I should perhaps be a bit off-piste for this one. Mm-hmm. So it's a work-in-progress show, but I did the first show last night. And I think I'm lucky in a way, because what I get is I get a real mix. You know, I get Brexiteers, Tories, left-wingers, socialists, and it creates this dynamic. And I don't see it in many other shows where it's really vital, because everyone's grown up, right? Everyone's willing to have their point of view challenged, and I do love it. People think I don't like this festival. I love it because it's so easy to seem controversial here. So last night I just did a throwaway line about a woman that had reached 1 in the afternoon and was drinking without having done her chores, right? Now, look, there's a lot that you're reading into that. I didn't say she had a husband, or she got a wife. My inference was that if you were at home all day and you were drinking, you know, in the day, it might not necessarily, but that reaction proves it. So I don't think I'm an edgy guy or an edgy comic, but I think sometimes, like, the context of comedy makes me seem like that, you know?
Okay. Yeah, but it's good to challenge, you know, I think it's good to be challenged, it's good to challenge, and I think we need to talk about this stuff, you know, however boring it is and how much we've... We need to find somewhere in the middle, right?
I totally agree.
For all this stuff to work through. Because if we Brexit and 48% of people are still really fucked off about it, then you need to find some way of getting them back in or just turning them into slaves or something.
I know.
just your fascist overlords.
I like the way you talked about reconciliation. and then the longer the sentence went on, the longer the accusatory.
Those are the two options. And, you know, and vice versa, if it went the other way, if we did remain, you know, even if we'd voted 52-48 to remain, if we'd just gone, well, you lost, get over it, that would be the worst thing you could do. Nearly 1 in 2 people in the country are very unhappy with something. You need to do something to make... And that's what annoys me about the way people view Brexit. They go, 17 million people vote for Brexit, but 16 million people voted to remain.
Yeah.
And so 1 million people voted for Brexit. I think 500,000 people were taking the piss when they voted for Brexit, having a laugh. There's no joke in voting to remain. You could go, I'm just going to vote. Like you say, I'm just to see what would happen. I'm going to vote. I think 500,000 people just went, I'm going to do this for a laugh.
I don't think there were many of those, but equally, if you had a big red button that said, definitely don't push this button, I'd fucking think about it.
I think that a lot of people didn't take it serious, or they did it as a protest, or they did it as not thinking through what would happen, because we didn't know. No one knows.
Well, no one knew the consequences of Remain either in terms of the future of the EU.
Well, Remain, but that's the Remain would mean we'll carry on.
It feels like you're getting more angry as this guy.
They didn't know the consequences of Remain. The consequences of Remain would we'll be in the same place.
I'm sorry, Richard. You'll be able to go skiing. Like, it's all going to be fine.
I don't like. I just think with Remain, it was your vote to stay the same. So there is a change in leaving.
It was a bigger deal. No, I agree. But I also think like you tend to hear from the noisier sides of the debate, and that's true of both Brexit and Remain. But there was a lot of people, my wife voted Remain, which often it always gets that reaction. I don't know why people look at me and they just sort of think, oh wow, he allowed a free vote on the issue. Like, I just thought he looked like an electrician just wandered on stage, but like, he's quite progressive. She lost and she did get over it, you know. Yeah. So there's plenty of Remainers, and I think I'm totally against that kind of that I thought that was a terrible phrase, you lost, get over it. And I think both sides of the debate, even in the 2 weeks after it happened, almost lost people forever there and then. There was nothing into that 2 weeks, everyone lost their heads, and I think we're still sort of playing catch up from that period now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, this.
And we're also together in 2 years' time and see what we both think. I've got
a three and a half year old son, and you think the age we live in terms of YouTube and all that sort of stuff. I've said a lot of stuff, and you think kids already rebel against their dad. So this, I mean, I just hope I make a few quid. Do you know what I mean? At least I can throw that in his face.
But unfortunately, quids will just be worth so little by the time. Get paid in euros, that's my advice. Yeah. So what time's the show?
The show is on at 20 past 7. It's at the Frisian, which, by the way, is a great room for stand-up. Not a lot of comics go after it, but it's a really great room. It's with the Underbelly, and it's today, the 13th, as we are, right up to the 25th.
Oh, you've taken over my wife's slot in there. That's how my wife was in that room at that time. Just before
they call it the Katie Wilkins.
Katie Wilkins. Yeah. So you've gone from drug women solving crime to you solving Brexit.
Yeah. Imagine how disappointed people sort of feminist audience turn up. I've heard great things about this. And I come out and go, all right.
I can't wait to tell her you're sharing her room. Yeah. Can't tell them what's going on. She's very upset about Brexit, Katie.
Is she? Yeah. I'm not sorry.
So great. Let me just see if there's. Climate change is more important, do you not think? I mean, we haven't got any time to discuss. You've got 2 minutes to tell me.
See, the way I see climate change, right, you get a lot of people, that kind of say, oh, the world's going to fuck up, next week. And I think that's, I say, well, let's just enjoy this week. Do you know what I mean? You've set it too early. I now don't give a shit because of how early you've set it. Okay. And then you get the other side, which was just invented by the Chinese. whereas I'm more like, I think it is happening, but I don't think I'm going to change any of my behaviour at all.
Okay. You're not worried about your 3.5-year-old son?
Yeah, I'm just honest. I think that, if anyone here has cancelled a holiday because of climate change, let me know. Yeah. So, and this is the problem, right? I will get on the middle classes here. But you look like, you go on the most long-haul flights a year. I go Ibiza and Bognor, and that's it. But you use eco-washing up powder.
I went
and you
to Willicombe, that's where I went to my holiday this year in Devon.
Oh, I do,
I flew in a helicopter, obviously. Pouring diesel out of it as I went.
But I do, I do think you'd think I'd take the piss out of Extinction Rebellion, but actually I think they're putting their money where their mouth is. They're willing to get arrested. It's a lot different from some of these other kind of protests as well. So it's I'm not gonna knock them. I just think again maybe the catastrophize is so great that people think, well, if we can't change it.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of think with it really, if everyone, the flying is a big thing, and eating meat's the thing, right? So if everyone just cut down meat to once or twice a week, it is sort of weird that people are eating so much meat, really, historically. That would never have been something that anyone...
Yeah, I agree. I mean, maybe it needs a fairer... because it's sort of unnatural, the amount of meat that we eat. Maybe it should be, if you could beat it in a fight... if you could beat it, you can eat it.
Yeah, okay.
That should be... This could be... This could be... Can I do an emergency question on you?
Yeah.
What's the biggest animal that you think you could kill with your bare hands?
I think that is an emergency question. And I think I could probably take out... I live in the countryside, so I know how terrifying animals are now. Those big cows are too big, and horses are really scary.
I like the fact you even considered a horse.
I mean, I could...
I'll just choke it out. I'll fucking choke it out.
There's some little Shetland ponies near me that I reckon I could take down a Shetland pony.
I still think if it was angry and you were tired, yeah, it could be like a really cute move. And imagine getting killed by a Shetland pony as well. What an emasculating way to leave the earth. Like, everyone would be just cracking up at the church, trying to be sad about it. Because you're still young, and you died, but every time people thought about the Shetland pony, little giggles would break.
No,
especially if it had a funny name like baby. I was on a comic riff there, it just fucked off, didn't it? My brain went, no, you're out, Norcott. That's more than you usually do.
Yeah. I can take some insects out. I kill insects in my house. I wouldn't mind. And that's what we're going to do, is just eat insects. That's where we're going to be in 20 years' time, eating beef burgers made out of insects.
Do people really think that the world's going to be this fucked up in such a short space of time?
I think it is. We just need to, you know, if we plant, someone said if we plant enough trees, trees the size of America, there's an area the size of America is covered in trees, which isn't, you can just find some places you don't have to cover in America in trees, then that would be enough to pretty much offset it. So there's sort of simple ways to do it. And I think science will find a way through.
Yeah.
But I think, like, you know, it's sort of weird to me the president of the United States is going, no, fuck it, I'm going to make some money now and not worry. But he doesn't have to worry, does he?
Maybe we should reopen the mines here, just outdo it. You know, that's the way the Tories could get back in. We're really sorry. We know Northerners love coal. Let's reopen them.
It could work. Well, Jeff, it's lovely to meet you. You're always a controversial figure. Oh, we've got over a little bit. Never mind. Thank you very much for coming in. And lovely to see you again. Jeff Norcott, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Rahulastapa at the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Richard Herring. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. Thank you to everyone at the Newtown Theatre and The Stand, and everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. The producer is James Hingley. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to rahulastapa.co.uk to find out more. RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out who my guests are for the rest of the run.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books, and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, RichardHerring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It will make me feel sad.